I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the talk show about items of interest to the geeks of the world and you. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merrick. Good afternoon.
We are going to talk a lot about things today, many of them involving Marvel, some of them not. I hope you enjoy today's show. We certainly will.
Yes. I think there's no doubt that I'll enjoy it because I look forward to the show every week. And even though, you know, it kind of jumps around, we do movies sometimes, autopilot sometimes, and days like this, it's all stuff I'm into. So it's like asking me to, I don't know, play a video game. You can't begrudge the opportunity to do the thing you like to do. So here we are doing it.
Yep.
Welcome, everybody.
Doing the thing the geeks do.
That's right. We're happy to be here. And we're going to talk about all kinds of cool stuff. So sit tight.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what happened since last we met?
Oh, just real quickly, Marvel announced Phase 4.
Oh, shit. That's a That seems like a big thing.
At Comic-Con, Kevin Feige and a cast of thousands brought to you the 10 combination of movies and Disney Plus series, like about half of them are Disney Plus series, that will be coming out over the next 3 years. Phase 4 will officially begin May 1st, 2020. That's next year, with a period piece taking place in 2012. It's Black Widow, starring Scarlett Johansson, Rachel Weisz, Florence Pugh, and David Harbour.
Whoa. Can I, let me say something about that. The 2012 would have been the year of the first Avengers film.
Yeah, so, this is going to take place after the first Avengers film, if I understand it correctly.
Okay. So she has already said the words, "I don't see how that's a party." She said that. That's canon.
Mm-hmm,
but now we're going to be past that. She's had shawarma. They've all hung out together. Everything's good.
Right, right. Maybe we'll finally resolve all the weird stuff between her and Banner.
Okay.
What that was about. I guess we wouldn't, because that actually comes in Age of Ultron, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe we'll explain how it started.
She'll be using Vine. She'll be looking forward to the Amazon phone, Fire phone.
Yes, she'll have a Fire phone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what are the period elements of 2012 that we can have here? She'll trust Facebook.
Yeah. She's not real happy with the real auction money house thing in Diablo 3, but she knows they'll work it out over time.
She doesn't think VR will ever really catch on. it's going to be interesting. They're also supposedly going to show you what happened in Budapest.
Yeah.
Which means they'll have some flashbacks, I guess, because I think Budapest supposedly happened in the 90s.
Right. There's also a big cast a highfalutin cast, I would say. Like the fact that when there were rumors of a Black Widow TV show, and then as much as confirmed by Disney before all of this in some way or form, I thought, oh, well, this will be like Unlimited, right? Where Bradley Cooper came on and passed the torch to a guy who was going to be his character or the replacement for the whole series. And there might be a little bit of that, but it wasn't going to be big names. It was going to be a TV show. It was going to be like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with lesser known people or something like that. I had no idea it would be straight up Scarlett Johansson, somebody like Rachel Weisz, who is awesome. I love her stuff. I'm not as familiar with Florence Pugh, but I like David Harbour a lot. So this seems like a big deal. It's not just some throwaway, you know, thing. I'm not trying to offend Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. people. I know that you love your show and it's great, but to me that was always Marvel light and never true Marvel stuff.
They kept it so separate, right? Yeah.
Well, I'm excited. That one sounds great. Are you telling me there's more to Phase 4 than just that?
Oh, you know, yeah, he did announce a few other things. Falcon and the Winter Soldier TV show coming to Disney Plus, picking up after Endgame with Zemo as the evil person. The Eternals coming November 6, 2020 with Richard Madden, Kumail Nanjiani, Brian Tyree Henry, Selma Hayek, and Angelina Jolie. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings coming February 12, 2021, directed by Destin Daniel Cretton, starring Simu Liu from Kim's Convenience as Shang-Chi and Tony Leung as the actual real Mandarin. WandaVision coming to Disney Plus Spring 2021, leading right into Doctor Strange 2, starring Monica Rambeau, who will be portrayed by an adult Tiona Paris. It's the same character from Captain Marvel. Of course, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, coming May 7th, 2021, directed by Scott Derrickson, described as a horror film with Elizabeth Olsen, a Scarlet Witch in it. Loki, the TV series coming to Disney Plus, following what happened after he escaped with the Tesseract in 2012. The What If series coming summer 2021 with Jeffrey Wright, as you might know from Westworld, as the Watcher narrating the episodes. Then Hawkeye, the TV show coming to Disney Plus fall 2021, exploring Hawkeye's time as Ronin. And Thor, Love and Thunder coming November 5th, 2021, directed by Taika Waititi with Natalie Portman as female Thor, Chris Hemsworth also as Thor, Tessa Thompson as Valkyrie, based on the series The Mighty Thor by Jason Aaron. But that's it.
All right. Nicely done, first of all. Second of all, that's a lot of streaming stuff and also a nice mix of films. It seemed like a lot. And it, we with the part we didn't mention, well, we'll get to that in a second, because there's a bunch of like...
The next bit is like, but that's it, right, Tom?
Yeah. Well, in fact, I'll ask you, Tom, that's a lot of content for both silver screen and home. How could you possibly have more than that?
Oh, I almost forgot. Blade will star Mahershala Ali. And he did mention, without details or dates, Black Panther, Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain Marvel, Fantastic Four, and Mutants.
Oh, I wonder if that will be X-Men or not. Probably. The Mahershala Ali announcement and the fact that it's Blade, the other thing they didn't say about that, even though they had a cool marquee and showed it up on screen and everything and brought him out on stage, they didn't say whether that was television or film. So I'm real curious about that.
Oh, it's film. It's film.
Okay. Yeah. The reason
I assume they say it's Disney Plus if it is, and if they don't, then you're to assume that it's film. I could be wrong about that, but that's how I took it.
My assumption that it would be film was based on the gritty, violent nature of that franchise, not just the movies that it came before, but this, the
right, comic. If it was TV, it'd have to be on Hulu.
Yes, they can't have it. It's like Disney in the 80s with Touchstone Pictures. Remember that? They were like, we need a place to put our PG-13 content. Let's make Touchstone and put all of our stuff that's a little saucy over there. So I didn't think they'd put it on Disney Plus, because that just doesn't seem like what Disney Plus's goal is with original content. So a movie makes more sense. I think that's brilliant casting. I love the Blade movies. I love the Blade comics. Stoked about a Blade, a return to Blade, proper Blade. I'm stoked. That's great news. In fact, of all of it, I'm excited about all of it. That, the Black Widow series, and probably Shang-Chi are my three favorite things that I heard about.
Yeah, there's a lot to like in here. I'm really excited about Natalie Portman as Thor. I was not surprised that they are going to do a female Thor. I was surprised that they got Natalie Portman to do it. I kind of thought it would be, like you said, a kind of handing off of the torch. Like, right. Oh, yes, would have made sense to have her, but we can't get her, so we'll do this pivot. But no, they actually got her to come back. And I was feeling that way because it didn't seem like they were able to get her into the movies in a big way. Even in Infinity War, Endgame. It wasn't, you know, like a, it felt like clip art, right? Like it didn't feel like they gave her a big part. So I was thinking, oh, she's probably done with all this, but no, this is great. I'm super excited about that. Pretty excited about Doctor Strange being a horror film.
Yeah. I'm really curious about that. Really cool. Super interesting to go that route.
But the thing that I am most excited about is the Eternals, because I'm a huge fan of that Neil Gaiman version of the Eternals. And I like that idea of the you know, the Greek gods are based on these modified humans made by the Celestials. And you've got those tie-ins to possibly Thanos, possibly Star-Lord's dad, that you could at least allude to. But I think it's going to be great.
Those are also huge names. In fact, I think it represents, at least I think for Angelina Jolie, I think that's her first. That's a movie or show? Is that one TV or a movie? The Eternals.
It is a movie.
Okay. I had that wrong then. I thought it was a TV show. I was a little confused by that. I know they put a little Disney Plus logo up next to stuff that was supposed to be on TV, but I would like look at that and forget that the Eternals was not on TV.
Yeah. In my notes, the ones with double dashes are the Disney Plus ones. Falcon and the Winter Soldier, WandaVision, Loki, What If, and Hawkeye.
And WandaVision, I didn't know what that was until Schleicher on Monday clarified it for me. That's Wanda, a.k.a. Scarlet Witch, and Vision, a.k.a. The Vision. Right? It's not like some weird parody where we're seeing everything through somebody named Wanda. And it's called WandaVision. Right? I must have that
correct.
Right. Okay.
I believe that is correct.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Good. I mean, that's the information I was fed.
I don't know what the WandaVision part of this is, other than Elizabeth Olsen said that we are going to see the full power of Scarlet Witch in that series.
All right. Whatever that means. I'm excited.
Well, in other words, sometimes you look at Scarlet Witch and you're like, you know, you can end all of this for everybody. Like, yeah. You could just win. You're essentially the most powerful on the board because you can make people like just imagine stuff's going on that's not. You can throw them around the city. And so I think there's a feeling that like, well, maybe Scarlet Witch was holding back and she's like, well, not anymore. I'll be definitely full throttle in WandaVision.
It'll be interesting.
And then she'll be in Doctor Strange, which will be interesting as well.
Right.
Especially because her powers are mystical mind powers. Maybe not mystical, but they're mind powers too, just like Doctor Strange's.
Right. It's not all that just kinetic stuff she can do. She can do more. So all right. Final thing I would say about this is this all leads me to think that this is just all set up and stuff for a kind of Avengers future where we have new Avengers movies, but it's got a whole bunch of different kind of people in it now. And it's just, you know, it's not helmed by Captain America anymore, at least not, you know, Steve Rogers, Captain America. And it's a lot of these guys could come from the shows they're on to this. Like you could see Falcon and Winter Soldier do a television show on the streaming service, but then show up in a future Avengers or some sort of team up movie. I think this is great. Phase 4, bring it on. I'm ready for you. You proved everything was good in 3. So why not 4? Phase 4.
I like that there's a lot of Disney Plus content here. I was probably going to subscribe to it anyway. I am a little bit nervous about how much it is dominating the timeline.
Right.
Like if these don't go well, because of what we're talking about with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they were nervous about that, so they walled it off. Mm-hmm. And kept it from impacting the timeline. I suppose they're committed to producing these and they'll be produced. Also, what if I run out of time? I don't want to feel like I'm really missing something. I never felt like I was missing a lot if I watched the movies without seeing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I watched the first 2 or 3 seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I didn't keep going with it. Right. And that felt okay.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we'll see what happens. There's your rundown. Probably more at D23 in Anaheim, which is August 23rd and 25th. So...
Yeah, I imagine we'll get some more trailers, maybe some more casting announcements, stuff like that. But we've definitely got all of this laid out for us. And interestingly, we are getting 3 movies in 2021, right?
Yeah.
We're getting Thor, Doctor Strange, and Shang-Chi. But we're only getting 2 in 2020. And I have to believe that's because of Guardians. So I wonder, does that mean we will get a year with 4? Or what does that do? Are they going to drop a movie to make room for Guardians? Because I think originally Guardians was going to be the first movie back from the break.
Right.
And then they lost James Gunn and that kind of delayed everything.
Right. And now he's back, but he has to finish Suicide Squad 2 before he can do that. Because he is on that project. So I don't know what that ends up meaning for that movie. And they didn't talk about it. There was no mention of it other than at the very end.
Yeah, no, there was mention of it.
They literally mentioned it, so I shouldn't say it the way I said it. But
yeah,
that's all they did.
There was literally no mention of it except for the one mention. Yeah. So actually, yes, there was literally a mention of it, but that was it.
Yeah,
right?
No dates, no other hints. Just it's coming, and we'll let you know.
And
later.
So, okay, let's plan this out. 2022 could be Black Panther, Guardians, and Captain Marvel. 2023. Fantastic Four and Mutants. I'm not saying that's when they'll fall. That leaves one more movie if they're doing 3 a year that wasn't even mentioned. I guess Blade would be that movie. I suppose Blade's going to be in the MCU. So there you go. There's your movie. So no, we're not missing a movie. That's what they're going to do.
And you think Blade's R or no? R-rated? PG-13?
PG-13.
Oh,
that'd be my guess.
No.
They're not going to make an R-rated MCU. You'll notice they didn't mention Deadpool.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that yet. I need Blade to be hard. I need it to be R. It's not R. It's, the comic is R. You gotta do it.
I mean, I guess I shouldn't say no way. Seems weird that they would make it an MCU announcement though.
Yeah,
I feel like that would be an extended MCU, like a Deadpool kind of thing. I'm curious what they're gonna do with Deadpool.
Yeah, Oh, yeah, no. Deadpool, I mean, Deadpool is a huge moneymaker. They can't ignore it. And I don't think they can change too much of the prospect of it. I mean, maybe this stuff just gets published under whatever a new version of, I mean, it's still MCU. Because you consider, you know, the Spider-Man stuff is MCU, and that's, you know, Sony's putting it out. So I don't see why they couldn't do some tricks with studios or their own studios and put it under another name. I don't know. It's a lot of dancing around just to avoid an R rating. I think they hurt themselves by doing that. So I hope it's R.
Well, maybe they won't.
Yeah, I hope it's R. We'll see. Anyway, there you go. There's your Marvel, everybody.
Lots of stuff in Phase 4.
Yeah.
A company called Try Kids Brands bought the remains of Toys R Us and now has announced it will bring the stores back in time for the holiday season.
What?
Now, these will not be the big box stores. They will be probably in malls. You go to your local mall, you'll find a store that is available for lease. So they're probably going to get that kind of space. They say it will be a new store experience that will deliver the hottest toy products and brands carefully curated and showcased in highly immersive, smaller format spaces. The stores will have regular events and include STEM learning stations. The first two Toys R Us stores will open in the Galleria, a Simon Mall in Houston, Texas, and the Westfield Garden State Plaza in Paramus, New Jersey.
All right. I mean, I can't say I was like missing them since the whole went away thing happened. So I can't, you know, I didn't have a lot of nostalgia for that place.
Well, you know, one of the reasons they went out of business is not enough people shopped there. And so those of us who didn't shop there and the reason it went out of business, don't miss it because we didn't shop there. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I guess so. I mean, in the 80s and in the 90s, I would get my fix of like Star Wars figures and sometimes video games and things I would get there. Like the 8-bit, 16-bit era, I would go there a lot because they were one of the only places in town you could go. But, I mean, in recent years, I haven't gone near that place. It's kind of like I love a Barnes & Noble, but I don't go there very much anymore. So yeah, I'm a little surprised this is all happening. I guess they still, I don't know. I think this is actually great. That is what I'm trying to get at. I think that there's a place for this. I think the strategy is a good one. I think the name still has some clout. And I think that there is a throng of new parents with kids that would love a more focused sort of approach and not just a big warehouse full of toys you're never going to buy.
Yeah, I think the idea of making it an event space is kind of the new trend in retail, right? Like we try to, a lot of the companies are saying, look, we want a place where people spend time because then they're more likely to sign up for our service or buy things regularly from us. Good examples of that are I've seen some smart oven companies doing pop-ups where they're like cooking samples for people and teaching people recipes. And so it's like, oh, I want to spend some time. And then hopefully what you do is you buy the smart oven and then subscribe to whatever service goes along with like cloud service or recipe service or maybe food delivery service for the smart oven. So this is them saying, yeah, we want to get kids in here. We want to give them some learning stations so the parents think it's useful for them to be there. And yeah, we'll send them some toys. I'm curious if there's going to be some subscription stuff that they offer or something like that. To make some money on the back end. We'll see.
This article has some grumpy commenters. I don't like to call out commenters, but I thought...
No, don't look at comments.
Yeah, I thought somebody would be in here going, yeah, my favorite store is coming back. And they're all like...
Really?
Not going to happen. Not going to work. It's all going to go straight into crap.
You're new to the internet, Scott.
Well, it's this Brothers Brick. I don't know. It looks like a fun, you know, I assume it's like a...
So wait a minute. So a website you'd never heard of had commenters that are angry.
Yes. Yes, but why couldn't one of them just say, hey, I'm going to go to Toys R Us, everybody. Just one of you.
I admire your optimism.
I try. I do my best.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tell me about George R. R. Martin. What's he doing?
Okay. George R. R. Martin told Entertainment Weekly that HBO's Game of Thrones prequel series will have hundreds of kingdoms because this is taking place well in the past of Westeros and therefore before the consolidation of the Seven. There will be Starks. House Stark will exist, but not House Lannister yet. In fact, Casterly Rock will be in the series, but it will be occupied by the Casterlys, for whom it is named. It will not yet have been given over to the Lannisters. George R. R. Martin says he still likes The Long Night as the title, but apparently because they named one of the episodes that, it sounds like maybe they won't pick that as the title of the show. So now he's hoping The Longest Night might become the name, which is hilarious to me because I know they've told George, like, just don't say anything about the name, okay? We haven't picked it yet. He's still out there like, well, I guess it's not going to be the Long Night, so what about the Longest Night? Anyway, there will also be White Walkers and Dire Wolves if you're worried about that.
Hundreds of kingdoms, you say. Hmm. That's interesting. I mean, how much can you really focus on, though, in a TV series?
No. I mean, the idea will be this is like England or Europe in the 600s, 700s, right?
Lots of little factions.
Rome has fallen, yeah. And there's just all these petty kingdoms all over the place. There's not a France. Post-Charlemagne, there's not a Germany. There's not an England. England, I know best, is made up of lots of little kingdoms like Wessex and Sussex and that kind of stuff. Germany is just, Saxony and Westphalia and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe Westphalia didn't exist, but you get my drift. Mm-hmm. That's the situation this is going to be in. This is an ancient time where there hasn't been a chance since the first men came over to consolidate any of these kingdoms, not even to the point of seven, which happened before Aegon came and formed them into the seven kingdoms as one kingdom. This is just petty kingdoms all over the place.
All right, petty kingdoms. I'm into it. Call it that. Also, you say there'll be White Walkers and Dire Wolves. I kind of wish there weren't going to be White Walkers because given their demise in the now future Game of Thrones series, I don't feel the same sinister thing happening. You know what I mean? Like, I know what their end is, so I guess
you know their end, but that end is thousands of years in the future. Yeah. So they can still do a lot of damage to the people who exist in this world.
Oh, it'll just annoy me because I'll just think, oh, they're done. You have no idea.
Yeah, but I think you're focused on the plot of Game of Thrones in part was how are we going to defeat the White Walkers, right?
Yeah.
The plot of this, I don't think, will be how are we going to defeat the White Walkers. If I get this right, the plot is going to be, how do we survive the winter? Mm. And the White Walkers are one of the many dangers out there.
All right. Also, lots of dire wolves, though. I'm into that. For some reason, that doesn't bother me. Knowing there's
because they don't have to spend their CG budget on dragons anymore.
They can do it. Well, I mean, in theory, right? The way you take this series, you would likely end in dragons, though, if you're going to ride right up next to
this takes place. Again, maybe this is important. This is taking place thousands of years before the Targaryens come.
So no dragons.
This is not going to end with the Targaryens showing up.
But did the Targaryens
this
just show up?
This is going to end with the end of the Long Winter and Bran the Builder building the wall, is my guess.
No, I get that. But when somebody shows up, it's not like the dragons just popped into existence.
Dragons are all over in the Doom. They're all over in Old Valyria during this story.
All right. We're not going to go there at all, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we're not headed there. We're going to stick in Westeros.
All right. I think they're going to be tempted. I think they want to have dragons. We'll see.
No, they're going to have direwolves because they're not going to want to have dragons because they're like, we can't have any of these direwolf scenes if we have to do one dragon.
They're
going to
have flying direwolves that shoot fire out of their mouths. I'm calling it.
That's what my dog wants. She wants to be a dragon.
Perfect. I like it.
I like the Knot says 20-minute opening sequence flying over all 100 kingdoms.
That'd be great. The guy's got to build those little rickety Lego diorama things like a ton more times than he used to have to. Poor guy.
It'll just be flashing by name after name. Boom, boom, boom.
Feel
boom.
For him.
Gotta
really
get through them all. Gotta get through them all. Yeah, probably not going to happen either. But yeah, this is good. This is going to be a different show. And your questions are illuminating because I'm like, yeah, I think a lot of us are not accommodated to the idea that George R. R. Martin has created a history that is immense. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go deep back into that.
And I'm cool with that. I guess the reason I bring up these touchstones is because when you say White Walkers, mm-hmm. I'm like, well, the minute I see a blue guy with blue eyes, who's a little frosty or half his face is missing because he's undead or whatever, I'm going to go, oh, those guys. Okay. I mean, I have this history or this future history in my head. It's going to be hard to separate them, at least at first.
Well, but think about it this way. When you see a dire wolf, you don't think, oh, dire wolf, seen them before.
No,
you think, get away from the dire wolf if it's not your friend.
Totally,
right?
I totally agree with you on that. And I don't know why they're different.
I think that's all the White Walkers will be.
Yeah,
it will be a mistake that was created and now a danger. Yeah. And maybe there'll be a subplot where they try to like beat them back beyond the wall, right? Mm-hmm. Once they have a wall, how do you keep them from eliminating all of humanity is the story here versus in Game of Thrones, the story was, how do you keep them from rising again? We thought we had defeated them during the Longest Night thousands of years ago, but it seems like they're coming back. This is going to be the story of, like, how did they get driven back so far that people forgot they were a threat?
There you go. How do we, how do we keep them at bay? I'm excited about it regardless. As much as I want to have something, you know, questioning to say about it.
No, that's good.
I loved everything about Game of Thrones. I didn't hate the final season the way other people did. And now I'm just left wanting more. So if George R.R. Martin's going to bring more of his world, I am happily to receive it.
Yeah, give me good scripts, give me good stories, give me good characters. That's all I care about.
Yeah, that's all I want.
It should be good. Yep. And then researchers at Harvard University, NASA, and the University of Edinburgh believe colonies on Mars could be built with aerogel. Aerogel is 99.98% air, but still solid. So easier to transport into space, right? Because the heavier something is, the more costly it is to get it off the ground. Aerogels are ultralight, can keep in heat, and can be either hydrophobic or semi-porous as needed. It can block out UV rays while letting in visible light, a big important thing on Mars where the atmosphere is so thin it doesn't keep out the ultraviolet light the way ours does. Aerogel warms up what's underneath it. No, I know. I'm like sitting here like, well, ultraviolet light does get through our atmosphere. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't keep it out as good as it does on Earth. Yeah. Anyway, aerogel warms up what's underneath it so that it could be used to cover ice on Mars and melt it. So researchers hope to conduct experiments with aerogel structures in the Atacama Desert in Chile, which is very high up and very cold, or the McMurdo Dry Valleys into Antarctica, also very high up and very cold. Both places have sub-zero Celsius temperatures.
I am going to use this opportunity to recommend something. So on Steam, something, it's not a game. It's more of a, I don't know, a experiment slash demo. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's not a game. Was never meant to be. It is called Project Eagle. And what is cool about Project Eagle is it's freely downloadable. Doesn't cost you a dime. Let me pull it up over here. Here we go. It is a 3D interactive Mars base. And it's very cool. And I want to say this was made by it's a company called Blackbird Interactive, but they worked with NASA and JPL. Oh, that's JPL, the rocket base. JPL, whatever it is. I forget the name of it. Direct Guidance Missile people. Anyway, they made this big 3D world that you can kind of float around and look at that describes what would be the early goings on of a Mars base. They have algae generators. They have all this kind of mining tech. They show where habitats would be and how people would live in them, how they'd capture sunlight during the day so they could, at night when the extreme colds hit, they'd, you know, have ways of keeping everything going. And you can change the time of day kind of at will. You sort of float around in sort of a godlike mode. There's all this chatter in the background coming from radio signals of people, you know, barking orders and telling people what to do. It is so cool. It's not a game. There's no goals. There's no winning it. You just experience it. And when you're done, you can leave on a shuttle that's there that supposedly is one that would take you back to Earth, and that ends the experience. But I would highly recommend it. Anybody who's got a decent video card and Steam loaded, just go look for Project Eagle and download it. This doesn't mention this gel material that Tom's talking about from the article, which is obviously the point of why we brought it up. But this sort of thing will inspire you to think about this stuff more, and to be able to sort of be in it like this is really cool. So,
yeah, even though this is transparent to visible light, it can be used as a wall, as a support structure. They're talking about making domes. So if you use that, I guess it's not really a game. Simulator, I suppose?
Simulator, yeah, simulator. There you go.
That's you can get an idea of how the aerogel could be worked into a Mars settlement, because that program will show you what a Mars settlement needs. And then it's like, oh, okay, what if we could build a dome here that let in the light? And one of the things they talk about in this article is having the dome built partly over ice towards the poles so that it melts the water that it covers, which is essential for the settlement, not just for drinking, but for fuel. Mm-hmm. One of the plans is to use water to make hydrogen fuel that will then power the settlements.
There's stuff in there about it being needed for coolant, and like water isn't just a a way to, you know, for basic life. Like, there's all these use cases, and that, and this demo sort of gets into that. So they're tied together, yeah. Even though what I'm describing to people may sound a little obtuse, go check it out. It's very cool. And while you're at it,
that sounds great. Yeah,
it's neat. It's neat that it's even there. Like, it doesn't need to be there, but they have the thought of, hey, let's put this free thing on Steam and let people experience it there. You know, people on Steam have nice video cards and are downloading, you know, 3D intensive games. Why not give them something like that? And I hope they do more of it. And JPL is Jet Propulsion Lab. Sorry, Chad, I was getting that wrong. But they are involved in designing this thing. Anyway, that is really cool. So are all our articles today. And a lot of them were sent to us by friends of the program who did that through our Reddit page. Tom, we should probably give some of those people credit.
Yeah, Jeff_Rose sent a few of these, and Strike It Rich One sent one. Jeff_Rose doing overtime work submitting the stories on subreddit. It is greatly appreciated. You can join Jeff_Rose and submit stories yourself. Lots of people in there voting on stories too, and we will pull the stories we talk about from your suggestions at currentgeek.reddit.com.
All right, that sound means this. We have a segment called Keep On Rolling, where Tom reads Scott a passage from French literary critic Roland Barthes' seminal work, Mythologies.
So I know when we've read these in the past, Scott, they've been a little bit ethereal, a little bit hard to follow. He's a semiotician. He's French. Mm. So I thought today we would look at his essay called Steak and Chips.
Okay. I'm more ready than I've ever been for this.
Right. I mean, you and I, we've had steak together before. I know you're a steak eater.
Yeah.
So I figure like maybe this one will be a little easier for us to wrap our heads around. Steak is a part of the same sanguine mythology as wine. It is the heart of meat. It is meat in its pure state. And whoever partakes of it assimilates a bull-like strength. The prestige of steak evidently derives from its quasi-rawness. In it, blood is visible, natural, dense, at once compact and sectile. One can well imagine the ambrosia of the ancients as this kind of heavy substance which dwindles under one's teeth in such a way as to make one keenly aware at the same time of its original strength and of its aptitude to flow into the very blood of man.
Wow. I mean, all I want is steak now.
He goes on to keep talking about like the way the different like medium, rare, like what the symbology of all of them is, and says to eat steak rare therefore represents both a nature and a morality. It is supposed to benefit all the temperaments, the sanguine because it is identical, the nervous and lymphatic because it is complementary to them, and just as wine becomes for a good number of intellectuals a mediumistic substance which leads them towards the original strength of nature, steak is for them a redeeming food, thanks to which they bring their intellectualism to the level of prose and exorcise through blood and soft pulp the sterile dryness of which they are constantly accused.
I think he's just sitting around in a robe all day, just thinking of everything. That's his job. That's what he does.
That's only half the article. We haven't even got to the chips yet. That's just the steak.
Well, it is amazing. And it just makes me want steak, if I'm being honest. So thanks, Roland. You've done it again there, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Was that a little easier to digest? Essential Tremor said that in the chat room. I got to give him credit for that.
That's pretty good. Just also chew your steak, everybody. Chew your steak.
40 times.
More than you do now. I know it helps me. All right. Hey, a quick note from ourselves, actually, because we want to let you know that if this show is to continue and be on the air and do the things you like, you got to help us out over at patreon.com/currentgeek. That's right. We use Patreon and we use it well. And a lot of you have already done it, and we appreciate each and every one of you. If more of you would, that'd be cool too. Head on over to patreon.com/currentgeek and check it out. I have brand new art to send you this month, and I can't do it unless you sign up. That's patreon.com/currentgeek. Do it today.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Tom and I used to do a show. It was called Forecast. It was four people sitting around predicting the future. Now we just do two of us. We still spell it Forecast like four, but we don't care. And we predict the future, technology, popular culture, and more. And this week, Tom has it. Tom, what is your pick this week? Or what is your prediction?
Star Wars will be remade in 2077.
Not re-released, not remastered, remade.
Remade. Here's how I figure.
Okay.
It takes generations to lose the attachment to something, yeah, right? You would never remake something while the generation that still lives can protest and rage against it. But as we know, quite often, once enough time has passed, if it's not Citizen Kane, then it will be remade. If not remade, I mean, we on the Current Geek Film Fest, we've run into this plenty of times. If it's not remade exactly, it can be redone, right? Like, oh, it's not 12 Angry Men redone. It's we're calling it this other movie, but it's basically the plot of 12 Angry Men.
Right.
I think what'll happen is about 50 years after The Rise of Skywalker comes out.
All right.
It will have been so far from the premiere of Star Wars: A New Hope that people will feel like, you know, that movie really looks like the 70s. Like, wouldn't it be great with the technology we have today and these hot new actors of the 2070s if we just retold that story?
Interesting. And by then you've got the, you know,
maybe they start with the Phantom Menace.
Right. Maybe. Oh, not. Interesting. Okay. That's an interesting twist. So we're not just talking about New Hope. Let's start with New Hope. You're thinking like,
right.
Oh, that's interesting. I think that's probably a fair assumption. At this point, there's no, you know, George Lucas is gone. His, you know, family continues to be around. They're doing whatever they're doing. It's owned by Disney or whoever owns it then. They're, you know, sitting around going, what have we not done for a while? Plus, you're talking
it's the 100th anniversary.
100th anniversary. Right? That's a huge deal, right? Like, do we even have, we don't have movies yet that are 100 anniversaries yet because we're not to the 2025 or whenever the first.
That's true. We'll be getting to our first round of 100th anniversary movies. I mean, there are movies from the teens, silent movies from the teens.
Right.
But yeah, the movies in the 20s are the ones people are more likely to think of, right?
And also celebrate. Like, you, 100-year anniversary would be for a big deal. If it's the first.
Right, the jazz singer. Yes. The first talkie. That'll be a huge 100th anniversary.
Yeah, that'll be a big one. We finally get around to Rosebud or whatever.
Citizen Kane.
Yeah, Citizen Kane.
They're not going to remake Citizen Kane, though.
No, probably not. But you'll still celebrate those 100 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what better way to celebrate Star Wars, which is really just pulp fantasy fun good times, than to remake it? Do you think there's any room for remakes between now and then, though? Will we have another attempt halfway through?
No, okay. No. I think you don't touch these. These are they already learned, like, just missing the mark a little bit will cause a lot of blowback. So I think they'll be very careful to tell new stories. That's the clarion call right now. Tell new stories. Remaking anything would be the opposite of what people say they want.
My son will be 77 years old when that comes out. Think of that. You and I probably not going to be here. I mean, we're still waiting for our magical medical, I don't know, the big moment for somebody to announce something rad. Elon Musk figured out a way to extend life by 30 years. Maybe. But chances are it'll be our kids who see this and enjoy it. Good luck to them.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I'd love to be 107 years old going to the movies.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Not sure that's going to happen, but you never know.
It feels unlikely at this point, but you never know. Expected life expectancy keeps going up. And that chance of Star Wars in 2077 just keeps going up with it.
Lon Meigs points out that Trip to the Moon, which is often cited as the first science fiction movie, was made in 1902.
Oh my.
Right. There was a 100th anniversary for that, I remember, back in 2002. But nobody thinks of A Night to the Moon as a story, right? I think you have to get to the talkies hitting 100 for people to really get behind it.
Yeah. Otherwise, just vignettes with a little bit of text.
Yeah, because it's in the 20s and particularly the 30s that we start to see movies that people still watch.
Yeah.
And people watch A Trip to the Moon for the historical aspect of it, but there's movies in the 20s and 30s that people still enjoy.
Yeah. And you're going to have a crazy succession of, just imagine what 100 years, 2084, that's going to be a year of insane amounts. Like, that 84 is full of so many movies. Well, maybe we won't have a generation around that appreciates it anymore and cares about Gremlins or cares about Indiana Jones, the Temple of Doom, or cares about anything in 84. So maybe it won't matter. But what I hope happens is that year is just a constant string of 100 years ago today. There was this awesome, you know, Back to the Future in 85 and you know, like that sort of stuff. But I'm not going to count on it. I think things wear out over time and people won't care as much. We'll see. Let's do this. It's the best thing of all time this week. Starring Scott and Tom. We pick a thing.
Hello.
We really like this week. It's something we think is so cool that it's the best thing of all time, at least for this week. And I picked this week good cover music in a live setting. Let me explain. So I'm not just talking about, hey, I'm at a concert and those are good cover songs, and not like that. I was at a restaurant in Midway, Utah.
I assume you're at an Applebee's and a guy named Kyle is got an acoustic guitar and he's playing Jimmy Buffett tunes.
You're not that far off. I was in Midway, Utah. We were at an Italian place. It's this beautiful place east of Park City. Just an amazing place. All founded by Swiss immigrants and pioneers way back in the day. So there's lots of Swiss stuff and influences, cheese everywhere, all that. So we're eating and we're chilling, and this guy who looks like me or you, just some dude in a button down and khakis, is sitting in a little space, little pavilion thing on the outside eatery area, and he's got speaker set up and a little mixer and his guitar, acoustic guitar hooked up into this thing. And he spent an hour and a half barking out some of the most chill versions of like great 80s and 70s songs, great folk music, but also some pop songs that are just sort of done in a quieter, more folk music kind of way. And I just found it, I don't know what right word to use. It just chilled me out like nothing else.
Uh-huh.
And I love that guy and he was great. And if he had a CD there, I would have bought it. And it was all just, you know, old music, but done to this dude's particular style. And it just made
my
weekend.
Well,
and done really well. Yeah. Like in this dinky town, it's away from everywhere. It was an impressive thing. And I thought of that guy all weekend after we saw that. He was just
no
great.
Kidding. That's yeah. great. Yeah. God, I have so many thoughts about that. Like one is cover bands get the bad rap because bars will pay their friend's cover band mm-hmm. to come play and they play bad versions of songs you don't like. Right. That's usually the stereotype.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that every musician who plays covers is going to do that. In fact, Jonathan Colton just put out an album of smooth songs, mostly from the 70s, yeah. that are all covers, but they're all even like almost note for note covers of the originals. But Jonathan just does that so well. And mm-hmm. it's perfectly enjoyable because of that. Because he's not trying to sound like Steely Dan. He's not trying to sound like Christopher Cross. He just sings them as Jonathan Colton and does them right, mm-hmm. does them well. So if your guy's like, yeah, man, this is just how I play and I'm a good musician and I sing well and I play well, I could see where that would just get you in the groove.
It did. And I'm glad you brought up Colton because I think that's the comparison. I think that is actually it. He had this ability to sort of just make it his own, but still be familiar, not knockoffs of songs, but actual arrangements that were kind of his flavor. It made me think of Jonathan Colton. It was really cool. So I don't know the guy's name. There was not much I could find about him. By the time we left, I was on a break and I couldn't find him to thank him. I put some money in his tip thing. He was great. So if he's listening ever in his lifetime, you were rad and I'd watch you play again.
The other thing that this makes me think, and this is a little bit farther out there, so maybe this is off, I don't know, but in the current world of the internet, you can learn to play better faster because there's more tutorials, there's more tools. If you really want to become a musician, you have a better chance of becoming a better musician now than when you and I were growing up and it was like, well, I guess I could try to find a music teacher around here to teach me how to do this, right? Mm-hmm. So there's kind of just this general access of information to help you become a better musician. Also, it used to be that the best musicians would get sucked up into the music industry, right? And they'd either end up in New York or Los Angeles, or they would just get spit out and not want to do music anymore. But again, in the world of YouTube and self-publishing, I bet there are lots of good musicians who just decide, you know what, I'm not gonna move out to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I've got a decent job here. I can play on the weekends at this bar for nice people like Scott Johnson. make a little money. And I got my YouTube channel and my CDs on CD Baby. And, you know, it's all good. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wonder if there are more talented people sticking around in locations. And then that started to lead me to think about, like, in the world of automation, people are like, what are we going to do for jobs? Like, maybe these become the jobs mm-hmm. of, like, I don't want to hear recorded or even, you know, certainly not computer generated music. I want to hear a live person who's good at this play me some songs I love, right? That could become a more regular thing that places can afford to do because they don't have to pay for some of the other stuff that gets automated.
Yeah. And maybe they'll get more for that work because it's a specialized thing that everybody really appreciates. And it actually goes higher in our expectations, or we appreciate it more. I don't know. That's usually what happens with this stuff. When there's automation or there's changes in the way we do work or whatever it is, we often have our expectations completely subverted. That's been my experience.
Oh, yeah,
it's never definitely. Been the prediction that I think I have. It's always something else that I didn't see coming. And I have no reason to think that wouldn't be
a great example of that is video phones.
Right.
Right. You see all these 50s through 70s, world of the future, we'll have video phones. And they're always a telephone with a screen, like a rotary dial, sometimes telephone with a screen.
Yeah.
We totally have video phones now, but we hold them in our hand.
Yeah.
And we just look at them, you know, they're not rotary dial phones and they're not big screens.
No,
unless you do it on our monitor on our desktop. But the point being, like, there's so many things about the situation that are different. The video phones don't look anything like we thought they would.
Yeah. I love that. And I also love that, you know, we have that historical reference. I love that it's inspirational, that it's aspirational. It's like, yes, we'd like to get to a place where that makes sense. Just turns out it comes in a really small package and has millions more times the processing power of the 1969 space module. Like, those kinds of eventualities are some of the funnest things to think about, and why I enjoy our show so much, because a lot of our stuff, segments and otherwise, you know, we end up landing on this sort of thing, and I think that's fascinating. So yeah, video phones. You're living the future now, everybody.
Yeah.
Right now.
Speaking of video phones, my best thing of all time this week is this 12 South high-rise charger.
We'll see.
This is a $70 charger, but I think I got it for like $30 on sale. They had a big sale because they have a new version of this that's got a faster charging in it and stuff. But the idea is the same in both this and the new one. It's a desk thing. Okay. So it's a stand up kind of a dock, but it doesn't really have a dock. You don't plug it in, and a wireless charging brick. So you just put your phone on it. It works with any Qi phone, iPhone, Samsung, whatever.
Yeah.
And it charges your phone, and then you can see stuff, you know, your upcoming notifications and stuff, or pick it up easily if you need it. But the beauty of it is it just plugs in by USB cable, and the charging port can come out of the stand.
What?
So that you could, charge your AirPods on your desk if you wanted to. Or make it a travel charger.
Oh, so that's unhooked and can charge now.
Yeah. I don't have it plugged into the USB cable because it's the USB cable won't stretch this far. But
right.
Yeah, I can plug this into the USB cable, and now this will charge whatever wireless device I put on top of it. Whatever
that's
wireless
great.
Qi wireless thing I can put on top
can
of
you
it.
Get a full phone charge out of that, do you think? Or
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Definitely.
Okay, yeah, because I can say that.
And if you get the new one, the new one has like super fast wireless charging in it.
That's really cool. I was like, what is the difference between this and the little stand-up one I have upstairs? And you just showed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
Thing comes out.
Yeah, that's what makes it great. So I keep this here, and I keep my phone charged. Sometimes I'll pop it out and charge my AirPods. That's a little bit wonky that I have to pop it out to do it, but it can do it. But when I travel, I will now leave the stand at home and take the puck and the USB cable with me and be able to charge wirelessly bedside in my hotels and stuff like that.
What's the brand again?
It's called 12 South. And here's the beauty. 12 South had a sale on these, like I said. I bought one on sale. I got it in the mail. I plugged it in. I saw the little blue light flash real quick, and I thought, oh, that's what it does. A little blue light comes on, mm-hmm. and I put my phone on it, and nothing happened.
Oh, no.
So I put my AirPod on it. Nothing happened.
Okay.
So I put an Android phone on it. nothing happened. So then I was like, oh, maybe the cable's bad. So I got another USB cable. Nothing happened. So I actually had to go out of town, so I didn't get to take it with me to test. Came back, sent a support thing saying, look, you know, here's all the things I tried. It's not working. And got ready for them to say, well, did you try this? Did you try that? First response from 12 South customer support within less than 24 hours, same day, was, great, we're sending you a new one. Properly dispose of the old one. Sorry about the problem.
Wow. That's quick, yeah. Quick service.
I didn't have to send it. I didn't have to send the broken one back. I didn't have to justify anything. It was boom, boom. I was like, now that's good service.
It Thank is. That's hard to find anymore these days. Oh, that's interesting. They, oh, wow. Look at the stuff they have for the MacBook charging. Okay. Yeah. There's some cool, they make a lot of cool products, turns out.
They're kind of an up and comer, sort of in the realm of Anker, A-N-K-E-R.
Yeah.
As far as like making cool accessories and stuff.
Yeah, I was gonna say Anker's kind of my go to for a lot of this stuff, and that's a one up there. That's really cool. All right, yeah, check that out. They're on Amazon and all over the place. 12 South is the brand. You'll find their chargers and other stations.
The high rise charger is the one I'm talking about, but they, yeah, like you say, they have a bunch of other ones.
Very cool. All right, well there you go. That brings us to the end of the show. Oh, you know what, though? I did have one. I was going to say I didn't have an email that I wanted to read on the show, but I just got one in, and I thought it looked good. Hold on one second. Just got to pull it up.
I cannot wait to hear what it says.
It says the following words, and those words are...
Dear Tom and Scott.
Frick.
Or possibly Dear Scott and Tom.
And
or Dear You Guys. I can't remember your names.
I found it. Oh, here it is. This is from Michael. He says, to Scott and Tom, I am grateful to you all for showcasing another source of entertainment from Korea and China. This is about our most recent Memories of Alhambra coverage that we did. I am really enjoying exploring new shows through Viki. And that was something you mentioned, I guess. V-I-K-I.
Yeah. That's where I discovered Ashes of Love before it came to Netflix.
Oh, there you go. I am especially tuned in to Asian entertainment as I am early anime fan going back to the 70s to the present day. I enjoy the more relaxed attitude the Japanese have with regards to sex violence and gender issues. I actually prefer subs to dubs. I actually like watching anime in the original Japanese. I have plenty of experience reading subtitles, so the Korean and Chinese dramas are no problem for me. Kudos to Netflix for bringing more international shows to their catalog. More entertainment, as American shows do not generally appeal to me. Love the show. Keep the current geek coming. Love the variety in these shows. Michael Keeper, or Kepper, I guess is how you say it.
Oh, Mike Kepper. Yeah.
He's all over the place in this community.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Thanks, Mike.
From Minnesota. Awesome. Thank you very much for that. And I'm glad I picked that one out because I got that early last week and I went, oh, I got to save this, and then forgot about it. But I'm glad I remembered.
You didn't forget about it.
I didn't. And look, if you don't want me to forget about you, send in your emails to currentgeek@gmail.com. That's currentgeek@gmail.com. We'd also take your voicemails if you're so inclined. 801-471-0462. If you stick around at the end of the show, you'll hear Legal Geek pop in here and talk about the Activision Blizzard deal where they took down an alleged patent troll by proving that a patent covering customizable online game avatars was invalid over the Diablo 2 manual. It's a fascinating little story. It's also got a nice nerdy edge. If you're a gamer of older games, you might really enjoy it. So check it out. That's Legal Geek coming up right after we're done talking here. Next week, Tom, it is our film festival. It continues with Taxi Driver.
I'm walking here.
You're walking here.
I think that's from Taxi Driver,
hey,
right?
Hey, I'm walking here. Yes, I believe so, but I've never seen it, and I don't think you have either, right?
I have not.
Yeah, I have definitely not seen it. It's one of the only Scorsese movies I haven't seen.
I've seen sections of it, though.
Yeah.
So I can't say for certain that I've never seen it or that I was really wasted.
Oh, we got it wrong.
In college.
I'm walking here is Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, darn it.
This is the You Talking to Me, the one in the mirror where he's talking in the mirror and saying, you talking to me?
I don't see anybody else here.
Yeah. I got those mixed up too in my head. So don't feel bad. I thought the same thing.
So anyway. Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Is what we will hear.
Are you talking to me? Yeah. So this is going to be good. Robert De Niro in a very early role. Lots of Oscars, lots of cool stuff surrounding this movie. And the only Scorsese movie I think I've never seen. Oh, no, this and the DiCaprio Island one. Forgot what it's called. Something
Shutter Island.
Shutter Island I have not seen. It's the only other one. So it'll be good. I'm excited to see it. That's Taxi Driver. I don't know where it's showing, but...
I feel like maybe I have seen this, and I was just, like, in college and really drunk.
It could have been. I mean, I heard stories about
it. I don't know. If I can't remember, then that doesn't count.
I heard stories about Tom in college. Boy, oh boy, were those crazy times for Tom. Just kidding.
Yeah, it's a whole other podcast.
Taxi Driver, rather, currently showing on... there we
Netflix.
Go. Netflix, you're right. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, well, check that out. That's next week. 1976's Taxi Driver, available wherever you get your podcasts. I think it's going to do it for us. Tom, anything else you want to mention before we go?
Oh, do I? Freetimenewsletter.com. Great place to keep in touch with me. When I say keep in touch, I mean, like, you get the newsletter from me, you can respond to it, and then we'll have a conversation. You can ask a question or just send a comment and I'll say thanks, whatever. Freetimenewsletter.com keeps you up to date on all my writing. For instance, I just got the manuscript of Trigger back from Copy Edit. Mm-hmm. So we're moving along on the sequel to Pilot X. Yeah. Updates on that and more available at freetomnewsletter.com.
Very nice. For everything else, you guys are going to want to check out currentgeek.com. That's where we keep all the stuff for this show. Frogpants.com for any other shows you might be looking for. Lots of fun to be had there. Email us again, currentgeek@gmail.com. I think that's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, for all of you. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome to Legal Geek. This week, we turn back to our favorite geeky subjects after our usual summer Supreme Court sabbatical, with a review of a recent Court of Appeals decision confirming that a patent being used to sue World of Warcraft and League of Legends was invalid. A patent-holding company called Game & Tech sued Activision Blizzard and Riot Games for allegedly infringing their U.S. patent 8253743. This patent covered customization of avatars used in online games, which obviously falls right into the wheelhouse of games like World of Warcraft and League of Legends. Game & Tech is a non-practicing patent holder, which is why some have labeled them a patent troll in this marketplace. Nevertheless, whether you think the patent owner is a troll or not, Activision Blizzard has used their strong knowledge of fantasy and their own back catalog of games to vanquish the alleged troll. Patents can be challenged as invalid over prior art available at the time the patent was filed, and this validity challenge can take place in the courts or in front of administrative judges at the patent office. In this case, Activision challenged the validity of this patent in the patent office and won that case a few months ago. Game & Tech appealed to the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals. The arguments made by the patent owner were fairly flawed. One argument was that the patent office judges misinterpreted the scope of the claims, but as these administrative judges tend to be the best experts available on patent law and interpreting patents, this argument died quickly at the appeals court. The patent owner also argued that an obviousness rejection could not be made on only one reference. In other words, multiple references needed to be combined to prove obviousness. The Federal Circuit bashed this argument as being wrong as a matter of law, but it was a moot point since the patent could be invalidated either based on one reference or based on a combination of two references. As a result, last month the Federal Circuit affirmed the judgment of the Patent Office Appeal Board, confirming that the patent is invalid and not enforceable against the makers of WoW or League. More specifically, the court held that the Diablo II game manual described creating and customizing avatars for use in-game and in online chat channels, or at least suggested the concepts claimed in the patent well enough to render them obvious. Obvious inventions are not entitled to patent rights, so this has caused the Game & Tech patent to be invalid. The battle may continue between these parties, as Game & Tech has other patents which it seeks to enforce against the game company giants. But for now, if this truly is a patent troll, the Alliance and Horde have come together to bring a cataclysm onto this particular patent. The bottom line is, worldwide success and high profit margins as seen by the makers of WoW and League are very good at attracting lawsuits from third parties, patent holders or otherwise, who want a piece of those profits. However, for this particular patent owner and non-practicing entity, the courts have declined to allow them to cut in on the profits from Azeroth. Unfortunately for the big companies, employing legal teams to defend against such challenges is just a cost of doing business, especially in the modern era in the U.S. Hey, will you be at Gen Con in Indianapolis next month? If so, The Legal Geek will be there presenting on IP law and game design on Thursday and Friday. Please come check out these educational seminars or track me down on Twitter for a meetup. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.